Hello, this is Angela Ewing with KCIW Curry Coast Community Radio. Storytime. 9 o'clock Horses, Episode 16. I stood still for a long moment, staring at the brass plaque on the door that read Ronald Duluth, Photography. As I was about to press the bell, the door opened, and a swarthy-faced young man opened the door. He was stocky, well-built, with a shock of black hair that flopped untidily over his forehead. He swept it back with his large hand and smiled. "Ciao! You must be Amelia." He ushered me inside. "Ron won't be a minute." He had a bit of an accent, and I asked him where he was from. "Italy," he said. "Florence. Ever been there?" "No, I've been to Greece," I said. "I went to Paris several years ago, but I didn't get as far as Italy." "A beautiful place," he said. He led me to a small room off the hall. It was a few minutes before my eyes adjusted to the dark. I was in a warm cocoon, surrounded by an unfamiliar chemical smell that pervaded the darkness like incense. Ron appeared a moment later and asked me how I was feeling. I told him I was very nervous. "Oh, no worries," he said. He turned on a small table lamp in the corner of the room. "We should get you started." He nodded to me and took my purse from me to place it beside the lamp. "Here you are. When you're undressed, put this on, then call me." In one brisk movement, he reached up for the robe on a hook on the door and handed it to me. He disappeared behind a black curtain that obviously separated the room from another. As my eyes adjusted to the dimness, I could see the studio was equipped with cameras set up on tripods in all four corners. Spotlights hung in neat rows from the low ceiling, and I could only imagine the intense brightness of the lights when they were turned on. I undressed slowly. I thought guiltily of what my parents and Aunt Olive would think of me if they knew what I was doing. I hadn't even written to tell them I'd been fired from the Devereaux's. I suddenly realized I hadn't given them a forwarding address. What would happen if their letters went to the Devereaux's? I was almost in a panic mode when I thought about that. The Devereaux's had no notion I was still in New York. They thought I'd returned home. My father's quote came swiftly to my mind. "Oh, what tangled webs we weave when first we practice to deceive." Ron's voice cut into my thoughts. "You ready?" "I suppose so," I said. He appeared at once, and with deft, long-practiced movements, he adjusted the camera here and there, peering down intently, his hand cupped around the front. I stood in the middle of the room, hugging the shapeless robe to me. "You're okay there, just right where you are, it's fine." There was a burst of light, and I shielded my eyes, still holding on to the robe with one hand. "It's nice and bright," he said. A smile illuminated his face. "You're all right now, let's get that robe off." He walked to me and gently took the robe off my shoulders. "There," he said. His aquiline features suddenly softened as he looked at me. He went to a spotlight and adjusted the direction. "That's better. There, that's better. Can you let your hair down? Maybe pull it to one side?" I'd always worn my hair up in a twist because it was so thin and fine. I stood awkwardly, trying to pose before the camera's eye. I felt ridiculous. "Hey," he smiled and lifted his head to look directly at me. "I know this is your first time. Jeremy told me he thought you might be a bit nervous. You can do this. Pretty girls don't usually have trouble showing off their body." I cut him off. "Well, I do," I said. "I do." "Right, well, let's start again." He turned back to the camera. "Just relax, that's right. Put your arms up over your head and push your breasts forward. That's right, good, good. Now tilt your head back a bit. Great, great. Much better. Nice." I moved quickly around, getting the idea of what he wanted. The room was hot from the lights. The click, click, click of the camera filled my mind. Great stuff. Keep moving. That's good. Head up. Better, he said. Yes, yes, better. I don't know what my expression was as he clicked away, but suddenly he was lying at my feet, taking a photograph from the ground up. This should be good, he said. Make you look taller. Now we need to have some of you with props. He looked around at the different pieces of furniture at the back of the room. Let's see, I think the wicker chair, yes. You sitting on it with one leg over the side reading a book. Then I think a classic pose on the chaise, and one more with you in a gardening hat and that nice plant pot in your hands. Oh, I said, oh, not the hat, though. I don't look good in hats. From the back, then, eh? A shapely bottom with a hat. Provocative, don't you think? Let's try that, okay? He arranged me in one pose after another, then suddenly thought of something else and produced a blue towel which he draped over my shoulder and had me hold a bath brush. He had all the props. You'll be impressed when the negatives come out of the dark room. I'll make you look much taller than you are. As he walked to the curtained room, he said, It'll be about a week before I can get these developed. If you want to come back then. He popped his head back through the curtain. You see Jeremy these days? Well, no, I haven't seen him since he came with me to the apartment. When did you two meet? I asked, suddenly curious. I was in Scotland on a shoot. I used to be with National Geographic, freelance, you know. I met him in a hotel bar in Edinburgh. We clicked right away, pardon the pun. Nice guy. I miss him. Well, you could have sponsored him then to come to the States, couldn't you? I tried, but it meant getting a lawyer and all that. I wasn't really wealthy enough at that time. And you probably know they have a quota of how many Brits they let into the US. It's not easy for you guys. I know that, I said. Yes, I know that. He snapped off the lights after I'd dressed. He looked at me and smiled. Good job, young lady. Come back in a week, okay? We'll get to the paperwork, and then if I think they're good. Well, okay, okay. I hesitated as I left the room. You know, I'm really not sure about this. What if my parents saw me in Playboy? I honestly have to think about it. Well, why don't you wait until you've seen the photos? What'll happen to them if I don't want you to send them to the magazine? Well, I guess if you don't want them to be published, you'll have to pay me. Or I can peddle them to calendar makers. Oh, dear, I said. He laughed as he showed me out. You wait and see. I bet you'll be impressed, and I think you'll feel better about it then. You do need the money, don't you? Even that takes time. There's a process to go through. I have to warn you of that. Could be a few weeks. The front door clicked softly shut behind me. I stood on his front steps, squinting into the brilliant sunshine. Heat shimmered on the pavement, like a mirage in the desert. I made my way back to the dungeon. At least it was cool being underground. How strange my life was in the huge metropolis of New York. I spent nights alone feeling sorry for myself, wishing I was back in England. I could still use the airline ticket to go back. But then the old feeling of not quitting made me want to accomplish something before leaving. I decided the first thing I must do was to write home and let everyone know where I was. I went to the post office and brought several pre-stamped air letters, blue, thin, lightweight paper that folded into three and sealed like an envelope. 4-day air was better than 6 weeks service by mail, boat. I wrote to my parents, Aunt Olive and Colin's mum. I didn't know how to get in touch with Jeremy. I certainly couldn't write. His mail was delivered to the house, and I'm pretty sure Robin would want to know who it was, and she'd see my writing anyway. She'd expect a letter to be mailed from UK, not New York. A week later, I set out to the studio, eager to see if my photographs had turned out successfully. I was still nervous about the whole idea of nude photographs. When I arrived at the studio on 7th Avenue at 11 o'clock, I found the door locked. I knocked, but there's no answer. I waited around for half an hour, thinking it might be early lunchtime for some. I was just about to walk away when I heard an inner door open and close, and then the front door opened. There was a pretty girl standing there. She was blonde, tall, and beautifully dressed in a short red dress with a fringe that came level with her knees. She brushed by me with scarcely a glance as I stepped inside. Now, I thought, there's a girl who looked like a model. Ron appeared from another room in the hallway, and when he saw the door open and me standing just inside, he called out, "Well, come on in." The same smell greeted me as I walked past the door to the studio, a chemical odor that permeated the hallway. Ron beckoned me to follow him to what was obviously their living quarters. "Amelia," Ron said as he motioned me toward a chair, "what brings you here?" "The photos?" "Ah, gotta get to those," he said, tapping his forehead. "They're not ready?" I asked. "Nope, got busy. You see that gal that just left? Big-time model. Good stuff. But don't worry," he added. "I'll get to yours, I promise." I felt myself flush. I said, "She was about 6 feet tall." I knew if she was my competition for nudes, I might as well not even bother to ask for any magazine to publish me. Ronald must have read the skepticism in my face because he said, "I'm making you look tall, I told you that. Your proportions are good." Then he looked at his watch. "Hey, let's do lunch, just you and me. What do you say?" "Okay," I managed. Ron took me to a little bistro on a side street. The air conditioning was making me cold, and it was a reminder that I should always take a cardigan when I went into a restaurant in New York. He ordered a salad with chicken. I ordered the same. It was delicious. We talked mostly about Jeremy, and I told him how much I had enjoyed being at Fairview House with him as my friend. Ron looked sad at that, and for a moment his thoughts were lost to me. "Those were the days," he said. "Yes, those were the days." After lunch, he went back to the studio, and I stood on the corner wondering what to do next. On an impulse, I decided to check out Wall Street area, where, if everything had gone according to plan, I should be working. I ventured down into the subway station. I had expected it to be much like our underground tubes in London. Here, the trains ran just below the surface of the street. In London, the tubes are a long way down. During the war, Londoners flocked to the underground stations at night with their blankets and pillows to escape the bombing raids. When I emerged from the station, the heat was intense, and it was so humid it made me feel a little nauseous. As I walked along the narrow streets where the tall buildings gave shade, I noticed the men and women were well-dressed and carried briefcases. I followed a couple of men as they hurried inside one building, through the revolving doors. I stopped to check out the directory on the wall, and to my surprise, there, listed under brokerage houses, was Lerner Hutchinson Corporation, third floor. It had to be the same company, the affiliate of Wycliffe Brokerage in Leicester. Was it too much of a coincidence? It certainly seemed so, but then I thought, why wouldn't it be the right place? The address was right. My heart quickened. What would I dare to do? Go up and ask for a job? I was ushered into the elevator with several men to the third floor. When the doors opened, the men stood back, waiting for me to leave. They all got out after me. A long reception desk was opposite their elevator doors, and in large print, behind it was the name of the company. It seemed very grand to me, a whole floor for one brokerage. I asked the pretty dark-haired girl behind the desk who I could talk to regarding a secretarial position. She had a very pronounced New York accent when she replied, "You need Mr. Kornboig. He might be busy and you don't have an appointment, do you?" No, but would you check, please? She looked up at me, and I swear she rolled her eyes. Well, she said, his office is at the end of the hall. Second door on your right, just go and knock. It took me a minute to fully understand her. I thanked her and walked to the door marked Alex Kornberg. It was Kornberg, not Kornboig, as she'd said. The secretary in the front office was an older lady, nice-looking and gracious. You'll have to wait if you really want to see Mr. Kornberg. He's in a meeting right now. I waited and waited and waited. It was almost 2 hours before a man appeared in a dark suit, rotund and red-faced, with a jacket that strained against his portly figure. I told him my name and the company I'd worked for in England. He looked at me over his desk for a minute, then he said, I know who you are. Your boss is Mr. Travers, I finished for him. Yes, yes, James Travers. I told him you'd be welcome to work here, with his glowing report and recommendation he sent on your behalf. But then I heard no more. Are you living here now? He didn't tell me. I know, I said, not wanting to go into a discussion about where I'd been since I'd worked for Wycliffe Brokerage. I'm here now, if there's still an opening for me. I held my breath. He smiled and rose from his desk. I don't see why not, he said. Why don't you fill in the hiring paperwork? It's now in the front office, and then we can get you started next week. How would that be? Thank you, I said, trying to keep from hugging him. I'll put you in mutual funds. Isn't that where you were before, mutual funds? Yes, I said, that would be lovely. Thank you. He smiled at me and repeated, lovely. It all seemed so simple for him. I decided he probably hired secretaries and fired them so often it was no big deal. I spent the afternoon wandering around Battery Park and watching the activities around the water and out into the entrance to New York Harbor, trying to imagine all the immigrants who had approached the Statue of Liberty. It was a new life for them, a new life for me too. I finally found my way back to Flatbush and my dungeon. It was a dismal place, but I was happy that my day had been successful. I had met Ron, and I'd met my neighbour, whom I thought was rather odd. Very friendly one day, and then totally ignoring me the next. I had to remind myself that this was New York. Anything could happen in New York. The main thing was, I had a job offer. We hadn't discussed wages, I realised. But now I couldn't just call Mr. Kornberg and ask what my salary would be. Not now, could I? I decided I hadn't been too sharp when I was in his office, so I put it out of my mind. I had a job. I had just closed the door to the dungeon when there was a knock at the door. It was my odd neighbour. She handed me a telegram. It's for you. Came this afternoon. I thanked her and took the telegram into my living room, turned on every light, and opened the yellow folded paper. It read, Colin Hadley, stop. Formerly reported missing, stop. Now believed killed by Viet Cong. This is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio. You have been listening to episode 16 of 9 O'Clock Horses. Listen next time to episode 17. Thank you for listening.